All right, if you would open your Bibles to Genesis chapter 1. Genesis chapter 1. We talked last week about how everything belongs to God. Thank you. And so we're going to look this week on the concept of stewardship. As I talked last week, unfortunately, stewardship is a word that has been accosted by greedy churches. And stewardship no longer means stewardship. Stewardship means it's time to get more money. And so people have the stewardship emphasis month. It means we're short on our budget, give money. It means nothing to do with actual stewardship. What we're going to look at is in Scripture, it teaches stewardship, but we need to define the term, and we'll see it played out in the different passages of Scripture. But a steward is an old term back when there were kings and lords, and there were castles and lands and serfs and all of those type of things. And the term essentially was this, that a man would, like a king, would own the property and own the castle and own the buildings and everything, but then he may go off to war. He can't leave the realm without any leadership, without anyone to watch over it. So he would lead a friend, a brother, and that person would serve as a steward. They would have all the authority of the king, and they were responsible to care for the king's property, the king's people, the king's castle. They were responsible, though, to do that in a manner that was pleasing to the king, and they were to carry out the king's wishes, not their own. So the king would say, I want this crop planted here, this crop planted there, I want this building kept up here, I want these soldiers stationed here, etc., etc. And it was the steward's job to ensure that all of that was done. And then at the end, when the king came back for war, the steward's job was then to turn it back over and give an account of everything that he had done. Now, this would be done with kings. This would also be done with just wealthy landowners. If you ever watched or read the book, The Lord of the Rings, I know it's a popular movie, you can see this, and the guy there is a steward, and he doesn't want to give the throne back to the rightful king when the king shows up. You can find this not just in those movies, but there's other movies, other books where there are stewards. So with that in mind, let's look at Genesis 1, verse 26. And God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, over the fowl of the air, over the cattle, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps upon the earth. God makes man. Who does man belong to? Man belongs to God. Who do the cattle belong to? They belong to God. Who do the fish belong to? They belong to God. What about everything on planet Earth? Who does it belong to? God. But who does he entrust it to? To man. He entrusts it to man to have dominion. That means to rule over, to watch over. And the concept here is the idea of a steward. The cattle do not belong to us. Didn't we look last week how the cattle on 1,000 hills, all the cattle belong to the Lord? It's not yours. But you have been given the responsibility to watch out for that animal. Okay, so you have a dog. That dog is not your dog. Even though you may have bought it, even though you may have got it from the pound or whatever, that dog is not your dog. That dog belongs to God. And as such, you must take care of that dog in a manner that is pleasing to the Lord. Your home, you may have bought your home, but it belongs to the Lord. And he wants you to watch over it and to take care of it as if it belonged to him, because it does. And there's going to come a day when we will give an account, not just of our life, not just of our deeds, but we will give an account of all the things that belong to God that he has entrusted to us. There's coming a time when the king returns, and the steward is going to have to give an account for what he did with the king's property. We have been given the responsibility to take care of all the earth. Keep reading, verse 27. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God created he him. Male and female created he them. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful, multiply, replenish the earth, and subdue it. Have dominion over the fish of the sea, the fowl of the air, over every living thing that moves upon the earth. And God said, behold, I have given you every herb-bearing seed which is upon the face of all the earth, and every tree, and the which is the fruit of a tree yielding seed, to you it shall be for meat. And to every beast of the earth, and to every fowl of the air, and to everything that creeps upon the earth wherein there is life, I have given every green herb for meat, and it was so. And God saw everything he had made, and behold, it was very good. Notice what God has entrusted to man. Everything. Absolutely everything. So when we begin to talk about stewardship, stewardship is not just about money in the bank. Stewardship is time. Stewardship is what you eat. Stewardship is how you take care of animals. Not just we think of animals as pets or animals as livestock, but this also includes the little bird that built the nest in your front yard. Okay, this includes birds flying by. This includes fish in your pond. This includes fish in the ocean. This includes everything. This includes the weeds that grow in your yard, the grass that grows in your yard, the bushes that grow in your yard. This includes the ants in your yard. This includes everything. You have been entrusted every bit of it by God. Right? That, and at the end of the day, you're going to answer for it. You're going to answer for how you hunt, how you fish. You're going to answer for what you do with your yard, what you do with the trees in your yard. Why? They belong to God. Now, is God much more concerned with the occupants of your home than the things outside of your home? Yes. Obviously, how you steward your marriage, how you steward your children, how you steward your grandchildren is far more important. And our society could learn from that, because sometimes we care more about dogs than we do unborn babies. And that's something we'll answer for. But what you need to understand from the beginning, what we're going to look at this week, is that everything around you, you have been given the responsibility to steward. That includes your clothing. That includes your shoes. That includes your health. Okay, this is something very, very important to teach your children. Okay, their clothes. You know, little boys like to ruin clothes. Those clothes don't belong to little boys. Those clothes belong to God. And as such, you should take care of them. That is part of having dominion. Okay, we don't mistreat the neighborhood cat. You know why? Because the neighborhood cat belongs to God. Okay, now part of stewardship may be spaying or neutering that cat, okay? But that's part of taking dominion, is taking responsibility for everything around us and everything that God has entrusted to us. Turn to Luke chapter 12, because this concept is not limited to the Old Testament. But this is actually a very favorite theme of Jesus and his teaching. Jesus teaches on stewardship a lot. And because the idea of a king leaving his possessions, Luke 12:42, leaving his possessions with someone else who's a steward and returning, is a very good picture of Jesus Christ coming to this earth, dying on the cross, being raised from the dead, going into heaven, and he's going to come back. He's going to come back for his own, and he's going to come back and ask you to give account for your own. So Luke 12:42. The Lord said, "Who then is that faithful and wise steward, whom his Lord shall make ruler over his household?" In other words, who is that man who the guy is going to go out of town, he's going to leave, and so he puts one of his servants as a steward to watch over his possessions, to watch over his house. He said, to rule over his household, to give them their portion of meat in due season. Part of the responsibility of the steward is to see that the rest of the Lord's servants, the rest of his people, the rest of his family, are fed, clothed, and taken care of. Part of stewardship is taking care of your family. Part of stewardship is taking care of those around you. Part of stewardship is taking care of Christians, taking care of the poor. He then says, "Blessed is that servant whom his Lord, when he comes, shall find so doing." Notice that the steward is a servant. The steward is not the king. Many times people get the idea of dominion means I am the king, I rule planet Earth, and I can do whatever I want to. No, you are nothing but a steward, and you have to carry things out in accordance with the wishes of the true king, who has entrusted these things to your care. "Of a truth I say to you, he will make him ruler over all that he has." There's coming a time when the Lord will return and the steward will give an account of everything that he did. He'll give an account of all the fields. He'll give an account of all the servants. He'll give an account of all the silverware, all the money, all the food, everything. He'll give an account of it. Verse 45, "But if that servant say in his heart, my Lord delays his coming, and shall begin to beat the men servants and maidens, to eat and drink and be drunk." Notice what the steward does. Okay? He says, "I'm not going to have to give an account. Everything that my Lord has belongs to me. Instead of feeding all of my Lord's servants, I'm going to become a glutton. Instead of taking care of them, I'm going to be a drunk. And if anybody gets in my way, I'm going to beat the daylights out of them, because you know what? They belong to me." Remember this. This is one of the atrocities of the idea of modern-day slavery. Those people don't belong to you. They belong to God. Your children don't belong to you. Your grandchildren don't belong to you. Your spouse doesn't belong to you. They belong to God. And God has given very clear instructions on how you're supposed to steward your spouse, steward your children, steward your possessions. He's given very, very clear instructions. And so notice here, though, notice the primary concern of Jesus Christ when he returns is going to be your stewardship, not of your money, but your stewardship of other people. And you may say, you know what, I've done really good with my money and I've made billions of dollars. Okay, good for you. God's going to care more about the poor person you walk past every day. Rich man and Lazarus. Okay, God's going to care more about the way you stewarded your children, the way you treated them. Somehow we have this idea, if I tithe, then God won't care how I treat my wife. No, it doesn't work that way. If I am very good with time management, then God won't care how I treat my husband. No. Primarily, one of the things you'll see through Scripture is you're supposed to love God, love neighbor. Okay? Loving dogs is not in there. Should you steward your pets? Yes. Should you steward your horse, your cow? Yes, yes, yes. But the primary concern is how you treat other people, including with possessions. What is stealing? It is mistreating someone because you love their possessions more than you love them. And that can be said in business when you cheat someone. You care more about their money than you care about them. You think of somebody pointing a gun at somebody and taking their car from them. You care more about the car than you do the person. This is what this is talking about. When we begin to care more about earthly things than we do people. Keep reading. Verse 46 of Luke 12. The Lord of that servant will come in a day when he looks not for him, and an hour when he's not aware, and will cut him asunder, and will appoint him his portion with the unbelievers. Now, this is where things get a little weird in terms of our theology. And that servant, which knew his Lord's will and prepared not himself, neither did according to his will, shall be beaten with many stripes. But he that knew not and did not commit things worthy of stripes shall be beaten with few stripes. For unto whomever much is given, of him shall much be required. And to whom men have committed much, of him they will ask the more. Notice what happens to the unwise steward. Where is his portion? With unbelievers. Jesus equates being a poor steward with being lost. And that's where our theology doesn't really, really match up. But it makes sense. If you're born again, you're going to love God and you're going to love your neighbor. And that love God and love neighbor is not going to be some intangible, emotional, well, I really love people even though I mistreat them. I really love God even though I act as if everything God has given me belongs to me. You know, I really love God's people, but I'm going to abuse them. I'm going to mistreat them. In our society, love no longer really means love. You know, you can love your child as you abuse them. No, that's not love. You can love your spouse as you beat the daylights out of them. No, that is a very perverted definition of love. As I've told people before, if that's love, please don't ever love me. Okay? That's not the way I want to be loved. You see, we have in our idea that love is this emotional feeling that I have towards someone, whereas love, in many respects, is how you actually treat the person. And you can say, I love my family, I love my parents, I love my spouse. But Jesus said, if you love me, you'll keep my commandments. And you can say you love Jesus all you want to, but if you're mistreating his people, don't. There are many preachers that are abusive, spiritually abusive of their congregations, and they're lost. They're unbelievers. You know how we know it? Because they don't love the sheep. That's why they get a portion of unbelievers. But then he says this, that the one who has been given much, much will be required. The one who's been given little, little will be required. Please understand this. You want more things, then you're going to have to answer for more things. If you can't take care of the 1,000-square-foot apartment God has given you, why would he give you a 2,000-square-foot house? Think this through for a minute. And I talk with young men about this all the time. If you can't keep your bedroom clean, why would God give you a woman to care for? If you can't feed your dog, why would God give you a wife to feed? Okay, now this is hard because I had a young man one time. I want a girlfriend. And there's this girl I really like, and I want to take her on a date. And I said, there's not even room in your car because there's so much garbage for even to sit in the front seat. And I'm dead serious. The entire front seat of the car was filled with garbage. I said, maybe if you could take care of the front seat of your car, God might actually entrust you with a woman. That was, I think, the last time he came and saw me. But it's the truth. It's the truth. If you cannot take care of the small things, why would God entrust you with more? And if you do have more, guess what? You're going to have to answer for it. If you're going to give an account for every idle word, don't you think you're going to give an account for every idle penny? For every idle acre of land? We don't think in those terms. Okay? God has given you things. And you need to figure out how to use everything He's given you. Every penny, every second, every minute, every square foot for His glory. Because you're going to answer for it. You're going to answer for every bit. And you may look with envy at the person who has lots of things. Guess what? That person's going to answer for a lot more than the person who doesn't have anything. We need to remember that. Turn to Matthew 25. Jesus again gives us another example of stewardship. The same thing, by the way, applies to within the church. Many preachers want their church to grow. Okay, well, the church that has 1,000 members, those pastors and elders have to answer for a whole lot more than the church that has 20. They have to answer for so much more. All right, Matthew chapter 25, verse 14. Notice this. The kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling to a far country who called to his own servants and delivered them his goods. This is a man who is leaving. So what does he do? He points his servants as stewards. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1. Talent here is not meaning gift. Many times people get the idea of talent here with the idea of ability or gift. Right here it's talking literally money. He leaves his money with them. To every man according to his ability. Notice that the man who was given one was only given one because that's all he was able to handle. And we're going to find out he wasn't even able to handle one. And the one who was given 5 because he had the ability to handle it. Sometimes when it comes to possessions, when you talk about economics, when you talk about finances, in America especially, we are very jealous of people who've been given a lot. We are. We get very much like, oh, I want to be like that person. I want to have their car, their house, their, you know, their boat. I want to have their bank account, all of those things. But you have to understand that God has given you what you're actually able to handle. You may think you're able to handle a lot more, but God has given you what you're able to handle. And that's a very good reminder. We have a tendency to overestimate our abilities. I remember a kid in high school. I was his youth pastor, and he was convinced that he was going to play in the NBA one day. He didn't even start his senior year for a 1A high school. If you don't start your senior year for a little rinky-dink high school that's not even going to win district, you don't stand a chance of playing in college. Hey, you don't. But he was convinced. He was convinced. And so because of this, he didn't practice. Why? Because he's already good enough. Everyone else just failed to recognize his abilities. Can I just be honest? That's the way a lot of people are financially. Man, I could handle $1 million if it was given to you. No, you couldn't. That's why God didn't give you $1 million. It's the truth. Okay? So he says to according to his ability. Then he leaves. And then he that received the 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them other 5 talents. The guy takes what God has given him, and he takes dominion over it. He takes stewardship of it, and he uses it in a wise manner and makes money. Notice, and likewise, he had received 2. He also gained other 2. In other words, he maybe bought a business. He may have invested in something. He may have gone out and used that to buy a plow and then buy another acre of land and go and plow it. And then whatever he did, he used what he had been given wisely to make more. But he that received 1 went and digged in the earth and hid his Lord's money. The guy that gets 1 goes out and says, you know what, I'm not going to lose what I have. I'm not going to lose it. After a long time, the Lord of those servants comes and reckons with them. What is going to happen at the end of your life? You're going to come and you're going to stand before God and give an account. So he that received 5 talents came and brought other 5 talents and said, Lord, you delivered to me 5 talents. Behold, I've gained beside them 5 talents. The Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Okay, now I want you to notice that the last phrases of these guys, enter into the joy of your Lord. He also that received 2 talents came and said, Lord, you delivered to me 2 talents. Behold, I've gained 2 other talents besides them. His Lord said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a few things. I will make you a ruler over many things. Enter into the joy of your Lord. Then he which had received the 1 talent came and said, Lord, I knew you, that you are a hard man, reaping where you have not sown and gathering where you have not straw. And I was afraid and went and hid your talent in the earth. Lo, here you have what is yours. His Lord answered and said to him, you wicked and slothful servant. Okay, you lazy bum. You knew that I reap where I sow not and gather where I have not strawed. You ought therefore to have put my money to the exchangers, and then at my coming I should have received mine own with interest. Take therefore the talent from him and give it to him which has 10 talents. For unto every one that has shall be given, and he shall have abundance. But from him that has not shall be taken away even that which he has, and cast the unprofitable servant into outer darkness. There shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. Notice again, the person who is an unwise steward is equated with a lost person. Why? Well, because if you love God and you love neighbor and you wanted to follow the commands of Christ, you would steward everything that he's given you in accordance with his commands. And if you're not going to do what his commands are, by the way, most of his commands are stewardship. You don't own your wife, but God sure tells you how to treat her. You don't own your husband, but God sure tells you how to treat him. You don't own your kids, but God tells you how to raise them. You don't own the church, but God tells you how the church should function. You don't own so many things, yet God gives you directives on how to handle them. And if you're going to ignore every single one of his commands and do whatever you want to, that would make you a lawless one that he's going to say, depart from me, I never knew you. But I want you to notice what he's saying here. He expects us to take what we have been given and make it flourish. Isn't that exactly what we're commanded to do when it says take dominion? Doesn't that mean you're supposed to take an apple tree and make it more fruitful? Isn't this what Jesus teaches in John 15? That the one who bears fruit, what does the husbandman do? He prunes it so it bears more fruit. Isn't that the goal in business? To be given $1,000 and eventually turn it around where you have $10,000? Isn't that the goal? I mean, isn't that the goal of everything? That when you've been given something to make it better, to make it profitable, isn't this the idea of if you have a product, you want to be able to make it faster, better, cheaper? Isn't that the goal? And one of the things that's sad, and we'll look at it in just a little bit, is that Christian people have unfortunately been known for being the worst businessmen ever. If you've ever been in a business run by a Christian, most of the time they are very mismanaged. There's some, like Chick-fil-A, that have done very well. But many times, working in a supposed Christian business is horrible because they're horribly mismanaged. Why? Because people forget the character of God. Notice what he says. I find this very interesting. He says that he gathered where he didn't sow. How on earth do you reap a harvest without ever planting it? You know what you do? You find the man who planted the field but was not wise with his money and doesn't have the money to reap it, and you buy the field from him, and then you pay for the field with the harvest that's on it. Wise business. You know, I know people who have bought land, and then you know what they had? Enough timber on the land to pay for the land they bought. See what they did? They bought the land, harvested the timber, and paid back and had the money, basically the land for free. You know what that's called? Wise business. This happens. You know what you do? You buy low, you sell high. Guess what some people do? They buy high and they sell low to the person who's buying low and selling high.
Okay, this is just common business sense. Christian people, of all people, should be looking for ways to be industrious, thriftful, fruitful, creative, because that is the way God is. Notice God's character. God is creative. Don't believe me? Look at everything. He made it. Okay, look at the animal kingdom. There's some pretty crazy creative things he did. Okay, God is fruitful. Okay, God bears fruit. God is industrious. God is thriftful. God is not lazy. And we are to emulate his character. We are to emulate his character with everything that he has given us to make it as fruitful as it possibly can be. That can be a yard. That can be a business. That can be a job. That can be your personal finances. That can be your children, your grandchildren, your marriage. Okay? We want to be wise stewards. We want to be the ones who, whatever little bit God has given us, we maximize it so that he entrusts us with more. Isn't the kingdom of heaven like a mustard seed that's planted, and what happens? It grows and grows and grows till it covers the whole earth. And Daniel, what happens to the rock cut without hands? It comes and smashes the tower, and then what happens to that rock? It grows and grows and grows and grows into a mountain that covers the whole earth. As Christian people, we are to be seeking first and foremost to advance the kingdom, but we are to make this whole world beautiful, to make it fruitful, and to reflect the glory of God. Turn back to Luke chapter 19. I'm beginning to think I'm not going to make it through all these passages this morning, so I'm going to have to leave some for next week. Luke 19 is the same story, but he uses cities opposed to talents. And it's the same story, and he does the same thing with the talents and pounds and cities. The guy that is faithful over the pounds, he gives him cities. But notice this in, let's see here, verse 24 of Luke 19. Pretty much the same story, but notice what he says here. He says, "And to him that stood by, he said, take from him the pound and give it to him that has 10 pounds. And they said, Lord, he has 10 pounds. By the way, have you ever felt that way? But it seems like sometimes the rich just get richer. Like, but Lord, how come they're the one that got the new house? They already had the nice house. How come they're the one that got the new car? How come they're the one that got the raise at work? Now, again, we're not talking prosperity gospel here. We're not. There are many people who get advances and get promotions and all that by scheming, office politics, lying, stealing. There are people who get wealthy by not paying their employees. There's all kinds of that. So we're talking about that in terms of, that's not what Jesus is talking about. You're not talking about the health, wealth, and prosperity, that the one who makes $1 million is more holy than the person who makes 10,000. But notice what Jesus' answer is. For I say unto you, take, as that everyone that has shall be given, and from him that has not, even that he has shall be taken away from him. I don't have anything to lose. What are you doing with the little bit God has given you? What are you doing with the little bit God has given you? Listen, you want God to entrust you with more, then you better take care of the little bit you have. If you can't take care of your bedroom, why would God give you a house? If you can't take care of your bike, why would God give you a truck? If you can't take care of your own personal hygiene, why would God give you another human being? It's just the truth. And you know what I find? I find young men all over the place, and young ladies too, that will not brush their teeth, comb their hair, wash their laundry, keep their room picked up, and then they wonder why they're single. Well, one, because you stink. But two, why would God entrust one of his precious children to you? I find the same thing with people. Sometimes complain. I don't get a raise at work. I get passed up by everybody. And I go, you know, I don't work at your workplace. And yes, there could be office politics. But you know what happens? If you've been in the same place for 10 years and never been given a raise, never been asked to work overtime, never been given a promotion, yet everybody else that comes through gets one really fast, it may be you're not working very hard. It may be. Now, that's not always the case. Sometimes there's other office politics, and sometimes it's the owner's grandson. That happens. But many times we are very prone to blame other people as opposed to saying, am I being industrious? Am I being hardworking? Am I doing... I understand. I was talking with Larry the other night about how hard it is to be a white male in our culture, because many times you're the one that gets passed over for a job. That happens. My cousin made straight A's at the University of Kentucky and applied to the medical school and got passed over by students that were minorities and made C's. Which means if you find a young white male doctor, he's good. Okay? That means he made straight A's and did really, really good. And not saying that others don't, but eventually he was allowed to medical school, a doctor today. But the truth be told, that this sometimes happens. But many times we are very prone to blame the system as opposed to asking, am I being what God has called me to be? Am I maximizing my time, my studies? This is very good for you children in here. You need to maximize your time. Don't do the bare minimum in your studies. Okay, don't do the bare minimum to get a C so you can go to the next grade. Okay, study, study, study. And after you've made an A, then keep reading. After you're done with your schoolwork, read additionally to that. Read more, study more, be industrious. That is what you are called to be. That's what the example of Christ. Because there, the little bit that you may have, God can take away from you. If you're not going to use the little bit he has given you, then he'll give it to somebody else who will use it. Right, go back to Luke 16, a couple chapters back. This is a very, very good story. And this will be what we'll close with. And it's a very convicting story for Christians because of what Jesus has to say. Luke 16. He said to his disciples, there was a certain rich man which had a steward. Okay, here's a wealthy man. Joseph, remember Joseph was a steward for Potiphar. This is a wealthy man. He's got more important things to do than to pay his bills. Okay, he's got money to make. He's got places to go, people to see. So he's got a steward. The same was accused to him that he'd wasted his goods. Somebody comes and says, hey, boss man, your steward is losing you money. Okay, he is not making sure the crops are planted on time. There's a couple acres of land he didn't sow. He made a bad investment, lost you a couple million dollars there. He bought a business that went bankrupt. I mean, he is not doing a good job. So the Lord called him and said to him, what is it that I hear this of you? Give an account of your stewardship, for you may be no longer steward. He says, hey, guy, hey, steward, come here. I got a business trip. When I come back, bring the books. We're going to the books. Because I hear you're doing a horrible job. I want to know what you're doing with my possessions. Verse 3. Then the steward said within himself, what will I do? For my Lord takes away from me the stewardship. I cannot dig. To beg, I am ashamed. This sounds like so many people, by the way. Oh no, I'm going to lose my job. I can't be a beggar, and I definitely can't do manual labor. Don't expect me to do any digging anytime soon. Okay? This, by the way, is probably why this man was going to lose his job. Because he was kind of shying away from sweat and hard work. Okay, this man doesn't want to work hard. I am resolved what to do, that when I'm put out of the stewardship, they may receive me into their houses. He says, I got an idea. When I lose my job, I'm going to get in good with other people. So when I lose my job, I got other job offers lined up. So he called every one of his lord's debtor to him and said to the first, how much do you owe my lord? So he begins calling in people that own his boss money. And he says to them, 100 measure of oil. And he said to him, take your bill, sit down quickly and write 50. The guy says, you know what? I owe your boss 100 measures of oil, whatever that is, $100,000. You know what? We'll settle it for $50,000. You can pay $50,000 today, we'll settle the account. Now, this is probably why he's losing his job, by the way. Okay, he's probably losing his job because he's not making very good financial decisions. But he's showing a level of shrewdness and wisdom. Because now, let me ask you this. If you just had a guy that cut your debt in half come and knock on your door and say, hey, I'm looking for a job, don't you feel like you might owe him one? And this guy just saved you 50 measures of oil. Next, he said to another, how much do you owe? And he said, 100 measures of wheat. And he said to him, take your bill and write 80. Give me 80. We'll settle for 80. Notice verse 8. Now, wouldn't you think that the Lord would come and just trash this steward? Notice what he says. The Lord commended the unjust steward. Why? Because he had done wisely.
He was very wise in how he handled his business. Okay, this was a very smart thing to do. Okay, we may not like that what he did, but it's a very wise thing. But notice what Jesus says next. For the children of this world are in their generation wiser than the children of light. You know what he says? And let me give you a modern translation of that. Many times pagan businessmen know how to handle their money better than Christians. And many times pagan businessmen know more about business than Christians. This is not a compliment. This is an indictment. And this is an instruction to the Lord's disciples. And that is, you better learn how to handle your business. Okay? Ignorance is not an excuse for what God has entrusted you with. You better learn. If you have an IRA, you better learn about it. You better learn about fees. You better learn about mutual funds. You better learn about those things. Ignorance is not an excuse. You'll answer to God for it. If you're going to buy a piece of property, you better learn about real estate. You better learn about closing costs. You better learn about house inspections. You better learn about all that. If you're going to buy a car. Okay, some young men are talking about buying cars. You better learn. You better learn about everything to do with a car. You better learn about looking up consumer reports and looking up to see what was the Carfax, whether the car was busted and crashed before. You better learn. You better learn, or you're going to be taken to the cleaners. As a Christian, getting taken advantage of financially and making dumb financial decisions sometimes has been equated with holiness. It's not. It's dumb. Sometimes people say, well, you know, I sold it for a massive loss, but you know, that's because I'm so humble. No. Okay? Christians are not supposed to be greedy. Please hear me. We're not supposed to be greedy. And there are times that you may sell a vehicle to a widow or to somebody who's poor. There may be times you even give it away. There's nothing wrong with that. However, Christians should be very wise in handling people and handling money. And many times, it's okay to lose money on a business deal if you gain a business contact. Okay, anybody that's done business for a while, you know that. Hey, you may lose a little bit on one deal. You may cut someone a really good deal where you break even, but you know what you just gained? Years of business to come. Okay, Christian people should be wise. Okay, they shouldn't be greedy. They shouldn't rip people off. But you know what? Many times it's okay to do something at cost if it's going to open up. Or even do something at a loss if it's going to open up bigger opportunities for you. You know, you want to start a little lawn business and you push mow your neighbor's yard. You know what? You may charge $40 and be the last job you do. You may charge $15 and not really make much. But you know what? You'll get the rest of the neighborhood. Okay? This is the wisdom he's trying to teach us here. And this is the wisdom we need to teach our children. And this is the wisdom that Christians need to have. You have been entrusted with houses, lands, cars, clothes, people, spouse, children, grandchildren, money, job, talents, gifts, abilities, tools. What are you doing with them? What are you doing with them? You've been given the opportunity for a wonderful education. You're going to answer for that. You're going to answer for every hour that you've been given in front of your books. You're going to be given an answer for every moment you spent raising those little kids. We as Christian people need to remember this. Jesus, keep reading here. Jesus says this. I say to you, make to yourselves friends of the mammon of unrighteousness, that when you fail, they may receive you into everlasting habitations. Notice he doesn't say to suck up to people because they're wealthy and you want their money. He says build good relationships with people. Build wonderful relationships with people, even people that are wealthy. By the way, Jesus did not work. And Jesus did not beg. Jesus did the Lord's work. He worked as a carpenter, and then he went to the ministry. And while he was in the ministry, he spent all of his time taking care of the poor, taking care of the broken, and preaching the gospel. And guess who financed him? Wealthy people. Joanna. Susanna. They financed his work. Now, did he work hard? Yes, he was a carpenter. He worked hard. Okay, we're not saying Jesus was lazy. I'm saying that. But you know what he had developed? Good friendships. Did Jesus own a home? No. Did he sleep outside every night?
No. Many people who owned homes welcomed him into their home, fed him. I mean, think of Elijah. Elijah had Jack Diddly Squat, yet he lived with a widow. Right? What is Jesus saying here? Make good relationships. You know what? Be a good neighbor. Sometimes losing money on a financial deal to keep your neighbors happy is a good thing. Okay? Maintaining a relationship. Remember, what's more important? People or money? People. What's more important? Your business or the kingdom of God? What's more important? So he's teaching us to be wise in how we handle ourselves, how we handle our business, but also how we handle business relationships. Many times, if you know anybody that's a good salesman, many times a good salesman is not the guy that's the used car salesman. No offense if anybody's a used car salesman here. But many times the good salesman is the person that stewards the relationships with people. Not the one who lies, not the one who tries to deceive, but the person who develops good relationships with people is many times the best salesman. That's what Jesus is teaching here. So he that's faithful in that which is least is faithful also in much. He that is unjust in the least is unjust also in much. If therefore you have not been faithful in the unrighteous mammon, who will commit to your trust the true riches? Okay? If you can't handle $5, why would God entrust you with someone's soul? If you can't handle taking care of your own money, why would God entrust you handling people's souls? By the way, what is one of the things that an elder has to answer for? The way he manages his home. Why? Because if a man can't manage his home, how will he oversee the house of God? Right here. If you can't handle your personal finances, how are you going to handle the souls of men? If you have not been faithful in that which is another man's, who will give you what is your own? If you can't handle, okay, working for someone else and taking care of their equipment and their stuff, why would God give you your own business? If you can't handle taking care of the apartment you live, why would God give you your own home? If you cannot steward that which God has entrusted to you, why would God ever give you anything that's yours? No servant can serve two masters, for he will hate the one, love the other, or else he will hold to the one, despise the other. Notice his conclusion in verse 13, is he's not giving instructions on how to be rich. What is the conclusion? You can't serve God and money. Part of being a wise steward is that you realize that you have been entrusted relationships. Okay, that's the main reason, by the way. Yes, you go to work so you can eat, but you go to work so you can share the gospel with your coworkers. And if all you're trying to do is make money and losing friendships with people around you because you're so greedy, guess what? You're not serving God anymore. You should be a good employee and make your boss money if you're employed. Why? So that you have the opportunity to share the gospel with him. If you are a lazy bum, you know what? Your boss is not going to listen when you try to share the gospel. Okay, I know Gabe talked about some people sometimes that he works with and how they mismanage things in work and then try to share the gospel with people. And people roll their eyes and walk out of the room. Okay? We want to be wise stewards. Why? For the glory of God, for the kingdom of God. Okay? Any questions on this? We're obviously going to go into a little bit more detail in the weeks to come. Any questions on this? Comments? What's it?
I get accused a lot of times of being a tight wad. And by whether it be mainly coworkers, people that work with me. And so I have learned to change the way people use the word tightwad, and I call myself a wise financial manager of the funds that I am in charge of. And a lot of times it's people's perspective. Mm-hmm. People look at things, and we're all stewards. You know, that's my job, as I've shared before. I'm a steward. And sometimes it's about how you perceive and how you see your job. And it's important that we know what our role is, number one. It's also important that we also know what we're stewarding over. A lot of times people lose their focus, especially even as Christians, you know, we can lose our focus sometimes. And I'm so thankful that in this church, you know, so many times we can, the things that God puts on your heart to preach on helps us to refocus. I know, especially when you battle sin, you can lose your focus. You can't be a good steward unless you are focused on what God has given you, whether it's your family, your children, your home, your land, your job, whatever you have in front of you. You've got to have the right focus.
Yeah.
You've got to be a good steward.
No,
but I think that goes into everything. How you even this, many of us look at this unjust steward and say, "My goodness, I would wring his neck." But you know how his boss got wealthy? By maintaining good business relationships. You normally don't get wealthy by ticking off all the people that you're trying to get contracts with. Okay, that normally doesn't work that way. However, what is the man commended for? Because of the way he handled finances or the way he handled himself? And the way he stewarded relationships. You know, many times we can do the same thing in a manner that is very good and the same thing in a manner that's very bad. Okay? Many times how you portray something, how you articulate something, makes a huge difference. Okay? Obviously, we're going to be honest in our business dealings, but many times the way you portray a business dealing determines whether you actually get the contract or not. It really does. So I appreciate that, Wesley. Anybody else? Mr. Harris?
Businessman. He told me one time, he said, "You should always leave something in the deal for whoever you're dealing with so they can make money too."
Yep.
And he was a pretty wealthy man, so I guess.
Well, it's part of being a wise steward is understanding, you know, I mean, we all watch, you know, the Jimmy Stewart film, Jimmy Stewart with the Christmas one, what is it, the
Wonderful Life,
yeah, you can tell I really watch it and know about it. But what does it say, at the end of the movie, what is the whole point? That no man is poor who has friends. But you know what, you can have a ton of money and not have steward relationships well. And honestly, in your business dealings, one of the things you want to do, yes, is you want to make a living for your family. But you want to help the other person to make a living for their family. But you want to do it in such a way that you leave with a good relationship with an opportunity to share the gospel. And also, too, you know, to me, I know of people who, in their work, they work hard, but they keep good relationships with the people they have contact with from other companies. Why? Because if your company goes belly up, who are you going to call for a job? You better make sure that even your competitors, you have a good relationship with them. Because there may come a time when you need a job, when you need to provide for your family. And you need to realize that, hey, crushing the competition is not always the greatest idea. Maybe having a good relationship and having healthy competitions can be good. Because you know what? There may come a time when you need something. And so you want to make sure that relationship's there and not driven by greed. Any other comments? All right. We're off.